Mini episode 103 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Sports Train, the finest pure sports talk show on both terrestrial and internet radio. Follow them on the web at thesportstrain.net.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
You know, it's interesting, Kyle, it's something you had mentioned to me a couple hours previously off air was a point about how the buy rates really, people don't really remember. But in 99, when we look at WrestleMania 15 and what they did, how comparable it was still to WCW, they were killing them in every way, except the buy rates. But then as 99 would truly become the abortion that it was for WCW, only later in the year would you see that. It's very interesting that the pay-per-view buy rates, from what you told me, were a lagging indicator of the difference between the promotions.
Yeah, I mean, you could feel the tide turning in the fall of 98. I mean, it very much was a war, a competition, certainly throughout 97 and through most of 98. Obviously, Goldberg fell in WCW's lap. That worked well for him for a while, but, you know, they made the stupid decision to have him lose to Nash at Starrcade in 98. But even still, most people forget about this. You referenced the Austin McMahon match at St. Valentine's Day Massacre, in February of 99. The Hogan Flair, you know, part 72 that was done at Super Brawl that year drew almost the same number.
And that is remarkable.
That was most people just assume, like, okay, Austin, the Austin era has begun, and WCW died a miserable death 2 hours later. They really didn't. I remember as a freshman in college, I became friends with some guys that were a couple years older. Even into the fall of 98, they liked WCW more. I remember they ordered Halloween Havoc, the Goldberg DDP pay-per-view, and they were really into that. And they were kind of like, yeah, WCW, it's kind of, you know, it's, you know, kind of teenager-ish or something. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay.
They were more into it. It wasn't until there was always the talking point that when WCW died, the adult audience left pro wrestling in massive numbers and has never come back.
Right. Because it's their core audience, by that point in time, had become people who remembered the stars of the 80s. People who were down with the Hogans, the Pipers, the 98 being the year the Ultimate Warrior coming back. They remembered those years so fondly. Randy Savage, certainly. Ric Flair, even though he didn't spend much time in the WWF back in the early 90s. But
it was
a lot.
It was stars. Yeah. It was stars of yesteryear that were still around.
Right.
And the WWE was able to cultivate a new audience. They were able to bring newer fans in, you know, young adults, you know, teenagers, stuff like that.
Right.
And it's really funny, as you roll into 2000, WCW, this was the first year that WCW was no longer a factor.
Right.
Now, obviously, in the early WrestleManias, there was a large gap as well. You know,
right.
They didn't worry so much. I mean, sure, we talked about, if you remember some of the earlier podcasts we did, Ricky, the WrestleMania 4, WrestleMania 5, we talked about the impact of Clash of the Champions had when they ran those opposed to, you know, both in 88 and 89, they ran those opposed to WrestleMania. But for the large part, WCW was a non-factor when it came to WrestleMania.
By and large, it was more so like today, the gap between WWE and TNA.
It was as bad as WCW was, it was
You don't think it was that bad at that point? Okay.
Let me tell you something. WCW's been bad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But
for many points.
In 2000 and 2001, it wasn't that bad?
It was still on a major network and had a major time slot.
Okay.
Okay, let me tell you something. TNA is an atrocity. Anyone who has anything positive to say about TNA should have their head examined. This is the worst wrestling organization not run by Herb Abrams in the history of the business.
Speaking of things that could take up its own segment,
I just wanted to say that about that, okay?
All right, that's a good point.
As bad as WCW got, and it was bad during this period, during opposed to WrestleMania 2000. It was real bad. The gap was real bad because WWF was about to get real good.
Right.
But it was never as bad as TNA.
No. Right. No.
TNA
no.
doesn't even
okay.
count. Some,
okay.
There are people who don't even know the existence of TNA.
Well, that's true. That's true. Ric Flair says everybody better. Keeps asking why he left wrestling altogether. So he's on national TV every
that
week.
That speaks volumes.
Yes, it
Thank
does.
Thank you very
yes,
much.
Yes, it does.
But,
yeah,
when you roll in it, I mean, WCW, when you talk about, you know, WrestleMania 12, even 13, 14, 15, WCW, that was still a factor. People were still interested in WCW. It wasn't until you got into WrestleMania 16 that really the company didn't have a lot to prove.
Right.
Industry-wide, they knew they were the best. It was over.
Right.
WCW go on to die a hideous death the year right. following, and we'll talk about that in great detail.
Right.
But WrestleMania 16, if I was to summarize WrestleMania 16 in one word, disappointing.
I could summarize it in two words, WrestleMania 2000, which is actually what they called it.
Yeah, so. It is true. Yeah, it wasn't called WrestleMania. You're right. It was called right. WrestleMania 2000. But that was such a great year, particularly the first
yes.
half for the company. And when you look at the first five pay-per-views of that year, there is no doubt in my mind that WrestleMania is the worst of the first five pay-per-views. It's
That's
not even
true.
Close. Royal Rumble was fantastic.
Right.
Featuring the Triple H, Cactus Jack street fight, where Triple H was his first great match of his... Well, I shouldn't say the ladder match he had at SummerSlam 98 versus The Rock is a great match. But...
Yeah, and his was it his cage match at SummerSlam 97 against Foley was pretty darn good.
It was good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't label that as a great match.
Okay.
But it was the match against Foley at the Royal Rumble 2000 was clearly Triple H's best. And by the way, considering what his opinion appears to be on Mick Foley nowadays, shameful, considering what Mick Foley did for that man's
yeah.
career when I talk about Triple H, okay?
Yeah.
You've got to be ashamed of yourself.
I don't know why he dogs him so much.
Yeah, the guy only made your career.
Right.
You schmuck. Okay, anyway. Then they have the title versus career match at No Way Out
right.
in February, an emotional match. I think just a hair below the street fight.
Right.
Just a hair below, because you didn't want, Foley to lose.
Right.
You're like, you know, it's kind of like this bittersweet thing. But then, inexplicably, they got off the track. In a classic booking sense, and by the way, there's a couple things we need to mention before we talk about this WrestleMania to set it up. One is no WCW being a factor. No Steve Austin, injured,
yeah,
late '99, taken out with the famous who hit him with the hit and run angle
right.
that they did.
But also creatively, the previous fall. You had Russo and Ferrara leaving for WCW.
That's very big.
So what you had here.
That's
to me, it was
big.
The best of both worlds in 2000. You had the over characters without the Russoian excesses, if you will. But the problem is, and I think we're going to talk about this as we set up WrestleMania 2000, this was the exception to the rule of early 2000, and they fell into some Russo-type traps.
Similar to WrestleMania 15, there were all these bizarre multi-person matches. There was actually not a single one-on-one match on this card, WrestleMania 2000. Not
well,
one.
Not among anyone with a knob. There was one female match here.
Oh, pardon me.
Yes.
Pardon me.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Terry Runnels, we'll just hit this now since it's so meaningless. Terry Runnels defeated the Cat. Terry Runnels with Fabulous Moolah defeated the Cat with Mae Young in a cat fight with special guest referee Val Venus in 225.
Certainly not a match that will give Steamboat Savage from WrestleMania 3 a run
right.
for its money. But,
so if we're only looking
okay.
at a certain set of chromosomes, you're absolutely right.
Okay,
there are
you.
No singles matches on this card.
So
and that blows my mind, by the
so
way.
So WCW no longer a factor.
Yeah.
No Steve Austin.
Right.
And again, it's incredible that it didn't matter that they didn't have Steve Austin.
Yeah.
That's kind
injured
of
injured with the neck.
During the eternal Hogan v. Austin debate, I will admit this. Okay, I will give the devil his due here. The one clear knock against Austin
yeah.
is that if Hogan went away for any extended period of time, the product would have suffered in the 80s. It didn't really suffer here at all without Austin. And he was off TV. I mean, they found a few ways to use him occasionally.
Right.
But largely he was off TV. And the company was doing, had its best year in 2000.
In that philosophical debate, I mean, The Rock, by and large, a self-made man. But do we give Austin any credit for being the perfect foil for him? If anybody helped make The Rock, Austin did. Do we give him any credit for that at all? Who did Hogan ever elevate? I guess that would be my counterpoint on
that.
Yes,
certainly not Warrior. Okay, you know, yeah when Austin, you know, now granted,
yeah.
When Austin loses to The Rock at WrestleMania 19,
right.
You know, the camera doesn't spend the whole time on Austin looking up at the heavens saying, why have you done this to me?
If we look at this holistically in terms of Austin and The Rock, I think you have to take into account Austin played a role. Again, The Rock is largely a self-made man, but to the extent that he's not, Austin's a key part of the piece, and that's something Hogan never did for anybody. So that might not be the point in Hogan's favor you think it is.
Well taken. Very well said, Rick.
Thank you.
But to bring full circle.
Yeah.
In the classic sense of the way you build a major show with a one-on-one match or just really WrestleMania, where WrestleMania, to that point, it had always been about one thing, feel-good ending. A baby face either retains or usually wins the world championship. You know, for the first 15 WrestleManias, the babyface always won the last match.
Yep.
And with a couple of post-Hogan after the Andre match, WrestleMania 3, it was always winning the title, except for one, Diesel beating Shawn Michaels, by the way. Just a little trivia for you there.
Right.
So you always had a babyface winning the title. In a classic sense, to me, and you could even have gone back, trace it back to the fall, I was shocked that they just didn't do Rock Triple H as the main event here.
Right.
They were clearly the two biggest stars.
Yeah.
Triple H, we should talk about that at a macro level. Triple H, I talked about how I thought the heel push was undeserved, the magnitude of the heel push. I'm not saying that him turning heel and getting a push was a bad idea, because he'd probably grown stale as a babyface leader of DX. But the magnitude to which he was pushed, I remember when I was reading on the internet, and I was not alone here, in the summer of 99, everyone's like, Triple H is going to be the guy to challenge Austin at SummerSlam, not the Big Show, who got the big money contract.
Right.
And I was like, really? Triple H? World title contender? Come on. And they were so hell-bent on getting him over in that role. Remember, they included Foley in the match because Austin would not do a job to Triple H.
Right.
And Triple H eventually wins the title, and when he first held the title, if you remember, people still had a lot of question marks about him. Like, okay, when is this going to end? We don't. Remember when he first won it, he still had China with him?
Yeah, he was not really that over.
He was not that over. And then they struck gold with the Stephanie McMahon element, which, again, women have always played a key role in his career. China, I thought, got him over as a mid-carder. And beyond. Stephanie got him over and made him look like a true... You cannot underestimate. I remember he wrestles Vince McMahon at Armageddon 99.
Yep.
And they do the heel turn after the match where Stephanie...
It was like a street fight so that you would believe Vince would have a chance.
Yeah, it was a street fight. Again, did a disappointing number on pay-per-view.
Right.
But Stephanie, who... They did this over-the-top marriage thing with Tess that had been ruined by Triple H. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone knows this storyline. We're not going to rehash that. And then, you know, she turns. It was all a big ruse. They were in it together. They write Vince out of the storyline for a while, which I thought was good. Same with Shane. You know, they were given free reign. It is during that period, feuding with Mick Foley, that Triple H, people were like, whoa. And, of course, by the way, his body seemed to get a little bigger, too.
Yeah.
During that period.
Funny how that works.
Okay. But anyway, I don't want to throw,
That's true, yeah.
I'm not saying maybe he just worked out really hard. I don't know. Maybe Sheamus was spotting for him back then.
I understand that.
His body changed big time.
I understand that, but, you know, you're an intellectually honest guy. You know, if Hunter walks up to you and says, I want to test your pee, Kyle Ross, you're like, okay, fair enough.
I peed clean for 6 months. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Under duress, mind you. Yes. But that's fine. Yes. That's fine. Here's what's interesting. Stephanie thing is...
I dare you to keep a straight face now.
I know. I'm failing miserably. The Stephanie thing, ironically,
There's nothing worse than waiting in that line, by the way.
Yeah, I can imagine. I hope to never experience it myself.
Yes.
The Stephanie thing was during the interregnum when he didn't
The
period he didn't have the title.
Which was a very short period.
Yes, dropped it to in a three-way at Survivor Series. It was going to be the ultimate dream match, Triple H, Rock, Austin at Survivor Series. They wrote out Austin because of the neck problems, did the car crash angle. He gets run over by the car, et cetera, et cetera. Big Show, a late substitution, wins the match.
I think they just felt the need to do that.
Yeah. Triple H wins the belt back in January, but... And that was after the start of the fac-gime between the McMahon-Helmsley family.
Keep in mind, though, even though the Big Show was the champion,
yeah.
Triple H was still the main focus of the promotion. Because if you remember that Armageddon pay-per-view I spoke of, Big Show wrestled the Boss Man, like, third from the top.
Yeah.
Because The Rock had a match. It was like...
With the surfing coffin.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I'll tell you what, I chuckled.
Yeah.
Okay. There was like a Rock and Sock versus New Age Outlaws match.
I understand that we can blame TNA stooge Terry Taylor for coming up with that angle.
Yeah.
Thanks, Terry.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rooster Booker.
Yeah.
But that, all these people remember for being the Rooster, right?
I was going to let you say that, okay. Yes. I wasn't going to beat down that drum again.
Thank you.
So Triple H was a very over heel champion. Probably going into the show, he was probably, you could argue, as strong a heel champion as they'd had since Randy Savage. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, stronger than Yoko. I'm trying to think.
Yeah. Even stronger than Michaels, I thought, was his buddy a couple years ago. He had had the two great matches with Foley, and people were, you know, of my ilk, you know, guys who've been on the internet for a long time, and Triple H was no internet darling. People were scratching their heads like, what is going on? This Triple H is having, like, good matches now all the time.
Right.
And they decided to do a four-way.
And they killed the stiff of the retirement match.
Yeah, we're not going to hit a lot of these matches in great detail. Sorry, kids. On this, because largely they didn't mean a lot.
Right.
But we're going to talk about a lot of things macro, and this is when I start complaining like a grumpy old wrestling fan about the booking and direction of this company. But... here was the deal. They had, clearly to me, a very obvious and in the classical sense setup of Triple H versus The Rock at WrestleMania with Rocky going over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had lost the title the previous WrestleMania as a heel. And, okay, he was clearly the star of the company at that point. He wins it as a babyface. He had won the Royal Rumble in January. And it just seemed very obvious to do. Then for just God knows what reason, they really harped on the Big Show, and they did this angle with the Big Show where The Rock's feet hit first, and they actually did, by the way. He botched the spot, The Rock. And they had the Big Show go over The Rock at that No Way Out pay-per-view,
right?
Which Shane McMahon came back and interfered, and that was a real head-scratcher. I remember the time I was like, what?
Yeah.
And then Foley, who retires, and it was a very tearful goodbye he gives, you know, Jim Ross give the old soliloquy while he was up the aisle. A month later, they bring him back. He didn't like that.
Right.
He basically has admitted that they paid him a lot of money to put his integrity aside.
Right.
Because he didn't want to do it.
Well, I don't blame him. I blame the bookers, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, you know, people throw whatever. I'm sure the amount of cash that was thrown at him that day, okay, there are very few things I wouldn't do probably for what that amount was.
Well, here's the thing.
And the Big Show was a case of, and this was also the case of him winning the title Survivor Series, they were still clearly in the mode of, we have to justify the contract we gave this guy. He's not living up to expectations. By this point, he was on his third heel run.
Right.
Okay? I think. Wasn't he? He came in as a heel, obviously, with the corporation.
And then he was with the union.
You talk about one of the most forgettable angles of all time.
Yeah.
He then turns heel and was with Undertaker.
That's right.
He then turned face when he wins the title.
Yeah.
And then he was a heel again. So he was on, in the span of a year, his third run as heel.
Well, and you know what
And I know he was lazy, and they talked about how he picked up bad habits from being with the top guys in WCW.
Right.
But, God, was this no way to treat
him. Here's what's funny. When we're sitting here doing this, and a point just occurs to me that I never thought of before. But I'm going to draw a connection here. They worked hard and through superhuman effort the year before got Triple H over. They were probably looking at the Big Show going, all we got to do is do what we did with Triple H. We'll get him over. If we force him down people's throats enough, try enough things, we'll get him over.
Yeah, and to Triple H's credit, you know, not to hit the company talking points, student of the game, wanted it more. Big Show had a lot of success right off the bat. Triple H was kind of a guy who did not have a lot of success off the bat in his career. Had to go to, started in WCW, had to go to WWF. But I remember in the build, like, no, I don't want this four-way. This is during the period where I first, and I don't know if it was just coincided with the explosion of the internet, me just being getting to be a bigger and bigger smart mark or whatever. This was during the period where I really started to, like, get critical of the booking. Even when you look at 99, okay, maybe in retrospect it's not what I believe. Like, if I was booking a wrestling promotion, how I would look.
Right.
There are very few times you can look at 97, 98, 99, say, I would have done this, and what you're saying would have made the company in any way substantially better.
Right.
I'm not saying, look, the company did monster business the first half of 2000, so maybe it's all water under the bridge. I just hated the idea of the four-way. It was a bad match, too. Foley came in way out of shape.
Right.
You know, the Big Show had been out of shape for a year. And it was one of those things, too, where they were the first to, it was so pointless.
Right.
They both get eliminated relatively early.
Right.
And then they do the, it was all a big setup for the McMahon swerve.
Right.
And Triple H was the first heel to walk out of WrestleMania champion. That
I was so flabbergasted.
I remember that was the time, you talk about traceable moments, you can go back to in time. That was when you realized, okay, they're really serious. And I don't know when the hoity-toity had started between him and Stephanie. I believe from all accounts it had started before
that. By that time.
Yes, yeah. And I don't know if that mattered at that point. Maybe it did. I think I'd be naive if it said it didn't. But that's when you realized, okay, Triple H is not going to have this mega push as a champion job and then kind of be shunted back down the card.
Right.
That's when you kind of realize, okay, this Triple H is going to be at the top of the card for a long time. And 12 years later, he's still on the top of the card. But and to their credit, though, they did kind of right the wrongs the next month. It did work to their advantage the following month with Backlash, which I believe arguably is the best. Well, no, not the best. Canadian Stampede and maybe Money in the Bank from this past year certainly come to mind. But when you talk about one of the best non-Big Four pay-per-views of all time, Backlash 2000 is on the short list. Unbelievable show.
Okay, I'm sure just missing that. No Mercy 2006. That's got to be in there, too.
No Mercy 2006.
I'm being facetious.
Okay, there we go. Right, sometimes you throw it. I'm like, God, did I forget? Like
I was a little too deadpan for you.
Like I said, we have entered the weed years.
Yes, I was a little too deadpan. Okay. Two things about this match jump out at me. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Never mind. If you're going to stick to this, because there's something else I wanted to hit
on. Right. First of all, with Foley, let's go back to the thing with his contract. Let's not sit here and be Mark Markerson or Tard Markerson or any of those guys. Dude, he was still under a contract, even if it wasn't a wrestling contract. It was you in the storyline are retired, but you're still under contract to us. So let's not forget that. They want him to wrestle. Yeah, maybe they had to bump him a little bit, but he was under contract. So that's why I don't fault him. He still had an existing contract with him. It wasn't like, oh, hey, go wrestle for WCW and make a mockery of your retirement like Ric Flair's going to do in another decade. He was still under contract to them, Kyle, so that's the main reason.
The thing is, I think that from a legacy perspective and definitive beginnings and ends, I think most Foley fans, maybe him included.
It's a big black mark.
I wouldn't say big, but it's a black mark nonetheless. I think most Foley fans, and I think if you honestly had Mick Foley here right now and said, Mick, we won't tell the company what you say. Mm-hmm. Do you wish that you had never wrestled another match after No Way Out 2000? I think he would say yes. Now, I think he kind of enjoyed the Flair thing a little bit in 2006.
Right.
And maybe the Edge. I think he's always spoken highly of the match he had with Edge at WrestleMania 22.
Right.
With the exception of that period, and by that point, no one had even cared that he was wrestling anymore. But I remember it was just blatant storyline violation. And I think people are so used to these things now that they just don't care. But it was just like, what? He just lost his huge retirement match,
right?
And he was brought back so, and you could tell his heart was in it, because he came in, and you know, by the time he was made commissioner a couple months later, he was a large man.
He was
a large man, and he blew that elbow. He's even spoken his performance was not up to par here.
No.
He did the old cactus elbow, got on the table, and it was bad. This was a bad WrestleMania main event.
Right. It really was. The other thing, too, you could win a lot of bar bets on this one, next one here. The Rock, by not winning this match, The Rock never in his career had a babyface title win at WrestleMania.
And I always thought, yeah, I agree. Because, and we'll get into in large detail what happened the following year with him as a babyface in the main event.
Yep.
But yeah, to me, from a legacy perspective, I always thought that he should have gone over here. Now, again, if you want to, you know what, I'm going to go here because it's going to tie into the next point I wanted to make about WWF at the time. I thought The Rock should have gone on, should have won the title here in a one-on-one match, and then his next feud, built in, it was already there, would have been with the incoming Radicals, who, you know, Benoit was sort of the uncrowned, still right. And the Radicals should have come in, you know, the Radicals, Benoit, Guerrero, Malenko, and Saturn, should have been this top heel group, who outsider heel group that came in, and should have been immediately put over strong, going over some of the dead weight in the organization, of which there was a lot at that time. And Benoit could have been, it was funny, Benoit eventually was up the primary challenger for The Rock a couple months later. It took a few, because Rock and Triple H main evented
with
a few shows.
With that awful homoerotic angle with him and Shane
McMahon.
We're just friends.
God, that was bizarre.
God, what was up with that?
I don't know. It was like, why can't you just say, I want to be his manager? Like,
We're just friends.
It was like, what was that?
Yeah.
But it was funny, but it was without the Radicals. It was so funny. They just did not want to do the, compared to WCW, and some people thought they did this to a fault.
Right.
Their willingness to admit that some things that worked in the other guy's promotion worked very well, and hey, we've got no bones about it that we're going to play off that.
Right.
WWF, and it started here, I thought, because, you know, WCW at this point was dying a hideous death, and everyone would start coming over, you know, certainly after the company went out of business.
Right.
They just never played off the heat the guy had in the other organization. You always had to break him down and then build him up the WWE way.
That's Vince's whole philosophy.
Which was dumb. Because these guys, remember they, like, on SmackDown, they all lose, like, the first time, which was so, they all lost to, like, DX. They then turned.
Well, Eddie was supposed to win, but he blew out his elbow.
Yeah, that's true. Splash. That's true.
But they were still going to lose overall.
Which was dumb.
Right.
And they lose. Here's my other point why I brought that up.
Okay.
Compared to the previous couple years of WrestleMania, where the WWE roster was relatively small,
yeah,
and compared to WCW lacking in depth of talent, that was no longer the case. Jericho had come over. There was a fellow by the name of Kurt Angle who was getting really good at this time period. You had the Radicals. You had a much more talented undercard in the WWE at the time. And it was kind of wasted, I thought, on this show largely. You know, when you hear Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit versus Chris Jericho in a triple threat match, two falls with two titles on the line, you're like, this will be great. I remember just being mad about the use of all of those guys. I was like, you know, Angle was okay there, but I remember I was really bitter. I thought Jericho got hosed right off the bat in WWE. I thought he could have come in and been like, and had Triple H's top heel spot right away.
Sure.
And I was not the only person who thought that, I remember.
If you read Jericho's book, Jericho clearly thinks Triple H sensed that as well. I'm not going to put words in his mouth. Yeah.
Because when you watch that debut he had, you know, the famous debut in Chicago, the Millennium Countdown, they could have made him champion the next month.
Have you heard what Russo has said on these shoot?
Wait a minute.
I'm quoting you from SNS. I can't even believe I'm doing this. Russo said on your show that he was going to have Jericho beat The Rock. It's hilarious. I'm asking if you've heard of this generic shoot. It was on your show. Yeah, Vince Russo said to you that Jericho was going to beat The Rock the night that
It
was the first night without Russo and Ferrara physically there after they left.
And they switched it.
Yes.
He claims that. That may just be a, like, some a desperate attempt by a desperate man to get on the side of some people.
Could be.
But I, The one thing I was saying about Russo is he always does tend to put over the new guy. You know, he never does it right, but he tends to do it.
Right.
And I believed him. I do remember that conversation, and I remember him saying that I believed him. And I just thought, and it worked out okay because Jericho, again, was one of those guys. He was so good, the fans started cheering him anyway, so he gets into babyface, but he was kind of treading water, and it was one of those things that, I don't know, I just got kind of crabby towards the booking during this period. The angle he loses both falls, but he wasn't the guy pinned.
But the guys who won the belts pinned each other. Benoit pinned Jericho to win the Intercontinental title. Jericho pinned Benoit to win the European title.
Yeah, and it was just one of those things that it was like three great workers, but the booking wasn't great. And then Jericho loses the European title the next night anyway to Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
But and didn't like China and Too Cool beat the Radicals in another match. That really,
that's a thing too. That
really
sucked
me off.
Yeah, China.
That really
yeah.
pissed me off.
They won
especially
that one,
especially because China turns and joins Eddie Guerrero anyway the next night.
Right. Right.
Like why?
So
not?
Stupid.
Yeah,
so stupid.
That was. I didn't like that.
That was Rikishi and Kane defeated DX, X-Pac, and the Road Dogg with Torrey.
Now Undertaker was not on this WrestleMania. He had been hurt. He was actually gone for a long time. They bring him back in Judgment Day as Biker Taker.
Biker Taker. Yeah.
And I love that. By the way, when he comes out. I'm sorry.
Big Red Booger.
I loved when he came up to American Badass.
That was a good stretch.
I like that tune, too. Good tune. Yeah, good
absolutely.
Tune for Kid Rock. Good tune.
Absolutely.
Whatever happened to Kid Rock?
I think you shared my love for Kid Rock. I'm a little surprised.
Yeah, you know, I liked those two albums.
Not too thrilled about him endorsing Mittens, but that's another story. But, Rikishi and Kane won this match here. So,
but I brought up Undertaker because there were some rumors for a while that Undertaker was going to come back here.
Okay.
That's why it was very random with Kane, that you know, long-lived team of Kane and Rikishi.
Right.
They chose to bring Undertaker back later, and it worked better anyway.
Rikishi had already returned face.
Yeah, we should talk about that. He was a real surprise. He was
actually
really
no. This
over.
Is actually you know what? No, this is before his heel turn.
Oh yes,
okay,
which killed
his
career.
It did.
But he was really over Rikishi at this period. It was one of those things that, you know, he had failed with many gimmicks throughout his career, and he just got really fat and had a rather large ass, and somehow that got him over. He was really, really over for a period, and I remember they started to kind of tread water with him.
Right.
But there was a period, like a couple months before this, where you thought that he could have been like a main eventer.
Sure.
As a face. Now, they tried a main eventer and it was a heel, and it was a disaster.
Right.
But with I did it for my people.
Well, it stripped him of the charisma that carried him to that point
on the card.
He was
all charisma. I mean, let's face it. He was not a Ricky Steamboat-like worker.
Oh, no.
But yeah, that was bad. And there was just a lot of stuff on the undercard here that it's just...
One great match, but let's go through the rest of the garbage before we get to that as we're sorting
there
our way back
down the
card.
There is one good match, but it's not... But, okay, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say TNA defeated Head Cheese. Test and Albert defeated Al Snow and Steve Blackman with Chester McCheeserton. In 705.
I don't even remember what that was.
I don't either. I was going to ask you.
TNA was just a backdrop for Trish Stratus, who at this point had no charisma but had, you know, a very nice rack.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Which pretty much defined her until she really took it seriously and became a wrestler and trained and really became pretty good. Hardcore Holly won the Hardcore Battle Royal for the Hardcore Championship last, defeating Crash Holly, the champion.
The hardcore title was kind of, they did, this was the 24/7 gimmick, and that was kind of over for Crash Holly. I remember that was kind of cool, but I remember being very disappointed that Taz didn't go over here. Remember, that was another guy they brought in the undercard. Huge. People say,
survive if I let you.
Yeah, people said, oh, Taz too small, Taz this and that. No, this is the big leagues. No one cares about Taz.
Right.
Okay, look, I know they picked the right place for him to debut in MSG against when he ended Angle's undefeated streak at the Royal Rumble. Taz could have been over.
Never followed up.
That's crappy, self-fulfilling company politics. Yep. Taz, I was already like disappointed like 4 weeks into his run. I was like, man, they're not going to use him right. Remember they were having him getting beat down by the Boss Man and Albert?
And a year or two later, they repeated the pattern with Rhino. I thought Rhino could have come in with more of a head of steam and been more than he was.
Yeah, I thought they actually did more with him than Taz, though. I think when you look at how close they got to their ceiling, I think Rhino got a lot closer to the ceiling than Taz did. But then again, I thought Taz's ceiling was higher because he's a great talker.
I guess I can't disagree with anything you just said. Though you made some good points there.
Was just so disappointing. I just remember Taz is the guy who, again, it was a little Shane Douglasian, if I just can use that term.
Right.
Remember he would cut these promos when he was the ECW champ, like burying Austin and Goldberg?
Right.
you know, like talking about how he could kick their ass and stuff like that. And maybe, like, that's kind of in retrospect, okay, like, if somebody doesn't really follow Taz's career in ECW, like, what, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And maybe it is.
Right.
But from seeing him as that, and he those promos he did with the towel on his head were unbelievable. But seeing him going from where he was there to kind of the titanization of him, even though it wasn't really Titan Sports, it was just bad. It was disappointing.
You are absolutely right, because as somebody who was a big old mark for the old ECW, creatively, he was decimated by going there.
And granted, like a Douglas, and I know the WWE apologist says, well, you can't curse on our show. He didn't need to curse.
That was a guy that really just conveyed intensity that came through the screen. Cursing was like the frosting on the cake, but he had other elements.
People said, oh, he's so small. But it doesn't matter. He was believable.
Shoot him differently then. What you got to do.
He was believable. People bought him as a badass. And there was so much dead weight in this company this time. It's inexcusable for some of these guys not to go over. But I digress.
You're right. They should have followed up on it. This was the opener. Big Boss Man Bull Buchanan defeated the Godfather and D'Lo Brown with Ice T and the Godfather's hose in their corner. That was what passed for a celebrity participation in this year.
What was your feeling on body count, by the way? Did you ever get into that?
Nothing was better than who was it? Bill Bennett that was reading it, I guess, at the Time Warner shareholders meeting.
There's nothing better than politicians reading rap lyrics. You know.
Yes. And the rapper is trying to say that was out of context.
I always love that too. Yeah. It's like, come on, just pony up. Yeah. You said it. It's like, I don't, you know.
Exactly.
I'm mad at you, Ice-T.
Yeah, love to know what the context was for that. All right, the great match on the undercard here, easily the best match of the show, the legendary triangle ladder match for the WWF Tag Team Championship.
I would be a little more reserved.
Okay, well, Edge and Christian defeated the Dudley Boys, who were the tag team champions, and the Hardy Boys to win the belt. So you're a little more laid back on this one?
It is a fringe top 25 match for WrestleMania.
Wow, okay.
I'll tell you, because the next year is so much better.
You're right.
And then the SummerSlam match. Keep in mind, this is not an actual TLC match.
Right.
I've always kind of, like, chairs were involved, but, you know, Edge and Christian had not yet done the concerto and stuff.
Yes.
Let's talk about the dynamic going into this match for a second. You talk about over.
Yep.
The Dudley Boys, going into this show, were about as over as any tag team in the history of this company.
Who got over as faces, mega faces, by powerbombing Mae Young through a table.
Which was awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's say that, okay? There was nothing that got me more psyched than when they powerbombed the 70-year-old woman off the stage. That was so awesome when they did that. Do you remember that? That was on a Raw. It was the Raw McMahon came back. Vince McMahon came back. That was unbelievable.
Do you know, by the way, how badass Mae Young is in real life? Yeah, I don't know if you ever heard the story. Like, backstage, she chewed out Bubba for, like, protecting her too much. That's how friggin' badass Mae Young is.
You know, I guess people didn't really realize that she deserves a lot of credit for doing that.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That was...
And for saying, I needed to get more of the impact.
That was, I mean... And it was one of those things that was so dastardly. You're right, they just got... I mean, it's the tip... It's what the WWE crowd became. It's kind of, you know, like the ECW crowd where, like, you know, it's the makeup of the guys.
I don't want to sound insensitive, but I don't ever want to hear some gray head start complain about osteoporosis ever again after watching that.
Okay, all right. Yeah, for true. But it was so funny because, again, in the classic sense, the Dudleys were the super over team, and I didn't want them to lose ever. I wanted, like, the Dudleys at this point to just keep doing what they were doing, like, forever. Like, I was so happy that they, because I thought they could get over in the WWE, and the WWE probably didn't think they could.
Right.
But, you know, against all odds, they did. I would argue, it as far as ECW alums go, real ECW, not like Steve Austin or Mick Foley, where they were kind of passing through, in my opinion. No one associates those two really with ECW.
Foley more so, but you're right.
True, but they're not ECW, you know.
Right.
They're
not like RVD or anybody.
Yes. They're not guys whose star was born in ECW.
Right.
They were guys who rehabbed their careers in ECW. The Dudleys, I would argue, is over as any ECW alum ever from that company.
I would truly love to hear Vince McMahon sit down with us and explain to us how it was the WWF version of the Dudleys that got over. How we brought them here and we painted them in our colors and they got over. I'd love to hear Vince explain that one.
Now, he did a little bit. I mean, at first they did the shtick. Now, they were obviously, again, going back to the language stuff, never going to be allowed to say. I mean, Do you remember, towards the end of their run, they were saying
Heat Wave 98 in Dayton. Oh my God!
They were saying things. I mean, it was like, I mean, you know me. You can't offend me, and nor was I offended. They were saying, I mean, they were talking about grandmothers with syphilis. Yeah. I mean, it was really bad.
Mother and her young daughter in the front row sucking D. Yeah. Oh my God!
Oh, that's right. When they say, faces. Oh yeah,
sucking black D. Actually, yeah. I mean, the stuff they were. I mean. The most outrageous, crowd-provoking, obscene stuff ever. I mean, if you had, back in the day, Jim Morrison getting led off stage by the obscenity police, where were the cops to lead them away in cuffs?
Yeah, they were. So they were super over his heels going into the show, but it was kind of funny that they would be turned faces pretty much right after, despite the fact they had spent months putting, you know, harmless women through tables.
Right.
The Hardys were the very classic babyface team going for the titles, going for revenge that you'd think would win. I remember going in the show thinking that the one team that would not win, I was like, okay, I'm not sure who's going to win this triangle match, but it's not going to be Edge and Christian.
Right.
Because they were kind of the tweeners. Now, they were also the most WWE-friendly, as far as the office goes, group.
Right.
They win. They were still baby faces, too, but they very quickly did the thing, and it worked out. It was the correct decision, because from there on out, they would have one of the greatest runs as tag team champions of any team in the history of this company.
Right.
So, it was just, I don't know if you can remember that time period. I was very surprised that A, Christian won that night, and B, that it was so the right decision, because I would not have guessed that going in.
I would have guessed,
well, now you can, based on how they
booked. No, but I mean, at the time, I don't remember being that surprised, because it was just...
I was shocked.
But here's the thing, though. I saw it as, with the success of the ladder match that was in Cleveland the previous fall...
But the Hardys got most of the rub for that.
I understand, but they'd been trying for years to get Edge and Christian over. And I saw it as the opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. The Dudleys were the ECW guys. The Hardys were like the indie guys,
right.
I guess. I mean, and Edge and Christian, now in retrospect, it's very obvious. Edge and Christian were WWF guys.
Right, right.
And that's why they went over. And it was the right look. It was the absolute right decision. Because the Hardy, by the way, tag team wrestling, which had been in the absolute toilet for years, in late 99 to this period, really picked up. I mean, these were about his three. If you look at the last, there has not been any team, correct me if I'm wrong, Ricky, approaching the level of overness that these three teams were at during this period since period. This
was the tail end of when they gave a rat's ass about tag teams, though.
Yeah, I mean, this was, you know, as far as a great three-way, you know, it would have been, you know, in the 80s they didn't do three-way matches and stuff like that.
Right.
But it would have been interesting if they could have come up with a dynamic. This was, you know, kind of, as far as having three very over teams at the same time, I mean, now they don't never even have one team that's really
How
over.
How about Bulldogs, Heart Foundation, Demolition? That would have been pretty badass back in the day.
Yeah, as far as...
I'm trying to think what would have been the best combo.
Or, what were the three most over teams at the same time during that period? Maybe those three?
Yeah,
The thing, though, with Demolition, when they were over, Bulldogs sort of were kind of definitely being phased down.
You're right. The Hart Foundation was the glue of the time periods, but they were on either side, Bulldogs and...
But regardless, this match is a step below the SummerSlam match, which I think is one of the finest matches of the decade, and then the WrestleMania 17 match.
Yeah, probably. So, all right, so that covers a lot of the stuff from 2000. We make our way up to WrestleMania 17. For the course of the next year. Again, not much to talk about as far as the time period goes. This is a time period of incredible continuity relative to the last couple of segments that we had done here. So
I've got something to talk about.
You move into the next one here. It's the beginning of the end of the Attitude Era. We didn't know it at the time, but it was Austin Rock 2. Yeah, and it was a thing where, for the first time, I think, you had, because keep in mind, Austin was out of it the previous year. When you and I say we wanted to see a heads-up match for the championship at WrestleMania 2000. The only two guys you could have done that with would have been The Rock and Triple H. Previous year, the only two guys you could have done it with were Rock and Austin. For the first time here, WrestleMania 17
you had spent the previous year establishing as a dominant champion, a heel champion, Triple H. And by the way, what that does for Triple H's legacy, being the first heel champion to come out of WrestleMania, cannot be overstated, because Triple H, in a kayfabe sense, the wrestler of the 2000s. And that really just launched it for him to do that.
And that year was his year.
Yeah.
I know the, you know, Austin was out of the picture for the most part. Rocky was definitely the most over babyface, but Triple H was bringing the matches.
He was.
In terms of quality. He had a number of great matches with The Rock.
Right.
He had a great match against Chris Jericho at Fully Loaded. And I want to start there.
Okay.
Because I talked about a little bit ago how I began during this period to really question the booking direction of the company. And I think this is when politics, starting in 2000 and certainly going through 2001,
yes,
as we'll get to, politics. You talk about how you had that fresh crew, you know, in 98,
yep,
how that worked to their benefit. You had a lot of established guys now. Austin was back, so he deserved a spot. Rock deserved a spot. Triple H deserved a spot. Undertaker deserved a spot. And then you had these up-and-comers, the new guys they had brought in. Jericho, Benoit, Guerrero, Angle. And those guys, and Eddie wasn't at that level yet. Eddie deserved better, but he wasn't quite at that level yet. But I remember, and me and, you know, a former co-host of you know, on a wrestling talk show, always lament Fully Loaded 2000.
Yeah.
As the night where you started to see the politics. You had three. They built it almost as a triple main event that night.
Yep.
You had three matches. Rock versus Benoit, Triple H versus Jericho, Undertaker versus Angle. It was three very established guys, probably the three most established names in the brand, versus three guys who were clearly positioned as being a big part of the future of the company. And the future went 0-3.
Yeah.
Now, me and the little fella always disagree on The Rock, Benoit. I didn't think Benoit deserved to go over that night just because they had been changing the titles so much between Rock and Triple H, they needed some stability.
You're right.
But I was livid that Jericho didn't go over Triple H. I thought Angle getting, because Angle to me, and even more so than the way, not that he just lost, but the way he was treated, the way that Angle jobbed The Undertaker, because at that point to me, it was very clear, and this is another reason I didn't think Benoit should have gone over the time, it was very clear to me that Angle was going to be the next great heel in the company.
Right.
And
Angle, lest we forget, the fall of 2000 into early 2001 was the champion. So when
yes,
we talk about all the guys,
but he wasn't built up or positionable. He
right,
like lost like all the time going
right
up to it.
But when we talk about how 17, for the first time in the Attitude Era, ironically towards the end of it, there were many potential guys that could have been in the main event. Angle's another one of them.
They did. It was one of those things. It was the first WrestleMania that they basically tossed aside storylines and just decided for business, oh, hell with if it makes sense, this is going to be our match.
Right.
And, you know, we could talk, Angle, you know, was, he always talked about how, and Jericho references, I know he did in his book, that they had had a conversation, that they both felt that their world title runs were place-holding title runs. They never, yeah, they were the champion.
Sure.
But they never felt like they were the man. And with Angle, you always knew that, deserved or not deserved, he was going to lose and not go into WrestleMania as the champion. Austin came back. It was in Texas. And I always thought it was very curious, even before the disastrous. Okay, first of all, this is the second best WrestleMania of all time. From a in-ring perspective, it is probably the best. But the end is, I'll get into great detail and negates that. But even before the event, I did not like the build of Rock Austin at all. There, when Austin came back in the fall of 2000, Ricky, and correct me if I'm wrong here, there were always those mumblings of a potential heel turn with him. Because the reason being is Rock at that point had become over as such a strong babyface that you logistically had, you at no point in company history did you have two babyfaces simultaneously that over as Austin and Rock.
Right.
And you didn't know what to do, so Austin, how much time did he have left? And I remember thinking, and this was me, and again, I got very disillusioned with the booking, and I remember this is when I really started to, like, you know, jot some things down. This is what I would do. Like, you know, like, that means something. And I thought if you were going to do Austin as a heel, he should have come back right away as a jealous heel of The Rock, and then kind of turn babyface, put, like, he would have come in, won the title, and this would have screwed Angle's title reign over. But again, Angle wasn't even admitted he wasn't the man. And to me, if you're going to make a world guy world champion, the company should be built around him. And Angle, I think, was the first example of a lengthy world champion that was the company was not built around him.
Yeah.
I mean, The Rock and Austin were still the two biggest
stars. You talk about the politics of it, his feud with Triple H the previous summer that resulted in the another one of these faux face turns for Triple H that ultimately, in the long run...
Awful. Awful booking.
Because they should have put, storyline-wise, they should have put Stephanie, who was unlikable storyline-wise, with Angle.
Triple H was the plan.
Yeah.
And it was nixed.
Triple H, studying his Kevin Sullivan history, decided not to go along with that.
Yeah, and it was nixed, and I thought it really hurt Angle. And people wanted to cheer for Triple H during that story. I mean, he had a guy kind of like hitting on his wife, and you know, people can sip with it. And people, that was a great storyline. And they botched it. And then they botched this is when they started botching big storylines.
Right.
The who hit Austin, that was a big swing and a miss with Rikishi.
Right. Before, and then it becomes clear that Triple H put him up to it, so he gets into a feud with Austin.
Yeah, and that was him vintage Triple H gravy training.
Right. And then then they would do these goofy things like Austin dropped his car off a crane like 50 feet, and within a week or so, Triple H was showing up on Raw again.
Yeah,